I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we've shared with you a lot of disturbing instances of indoctrination in our public school system, but I've got to say, this might be the worst. Plus, the state of Washington overstated the impact of its climate projects by 9,500%. And we'll end the show with the single most cringeworthy thing to ever happen in the United States Congress. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. I struggled with what story to start the show with today. We have this massive, what I would call a climate scandal happening in Washington state that we're going to get to, but I was dwelling on this exclusive that we have, and I was going to put in an unbelievable, but then I got angrier and angrier and angrier every mile I drove to work today about it, and I'm like, okay, we definitely have to lead the show with that. So the story takes us, again, it's an exclusive you only hear here on Undivided. It takes us to the Seattle Public School District and to a coloring assignment that a student brought home. Here's what it looked like. It was a picture of a heart, I guess, dancing on a field of flowers, and it says, "Be gay, read books." Okay? Be gay, read books. Now, you might say, Brandi, why is this one of the most significant stories of indoctrination you've ever done? You do stories on stuff like this all the time. One of the reasons why this got me so bad is some context about the student that brought this coloring assignment home. So this is a kid in special education in 11th grade at Ingram High School in the Seattle Public School District. So basically, we know that this child has some learning disabilities, because you might honestly look at that picture and say, why is this an 11th grader's assignment? Why is a junior coloring a picture at all? And it's because this is a special education class. So you have this boy who mom finds this and is like, what in the world is this? Be gay, read books. And so looks it up, and there's a little link at the bottom of the coloring page, and it turns out that it's a Pride coloring sheet that you can download and print off through the Seattle Public Library system. So there's a couple Pride-related coloring things. I have to imagine that the Seattle Public Library, I mean, first of all, it doesn't surprise me that they have this, but you have a teacher in the Seattle Public School District that is clearly seeking out some sort of Pride assignment. And they're going to the Seattle Public Library, downloading this, printing it off for their special education students to color in. So that's just part of the story. So the mom finds this coloring assignment, and it's very clear to her that her son has no idea what it even means. And it's not the first time that this mom has had a concern about her son with a learning disability being indoctrinated in Seattle public schools. So she tells us, and this will be important context to the next image we're gonna show. She tells us that one day he came home with this bracelet that said Diva on it. And she asked him like if he even knew what it meant, and he didn't. So he gets sent home from school with this bracelet that says Diva, and the mom told the school she didn't like it. She said, why are you like putting this stuff in my son's head who's in special ed and who didn't even know what Diva meant? Why does he have this bracelet that says Diva on it? So this is already something that had come up with the school. And then she finds out he's being given coloring assignments that say, be gay, read books, whatever the hell that means. What does that even mean? What does being gay and reading books have to do with each other? So then she finds out that her son's teacher has pictures of the special ed students up on the wall, right? And with little nicknames under them. And her son's picture up on the wall has the nickname Queen Diva under it. Queen Diva. She asked her son about this. He had no idea what it even meant. She asked him if he wanted to be called Queen Diva for some reason. And he said no, five times. He said he wanted his nickname up on the wall to be Ninja. Ninja, not Queen Diva. The mom tells us further that the teacher that her son had been repeatedly misgendering him. And again, this is a child with learning disabilities, right? But has never expressed to his mother that he wants to be trans, that he fully understands what that even means, what Queen Diva means, why they'd send him home with a bracelet that says Diva on it, why he'd be given a coloring assignment that said be gay. And so in the totality of the circumstances, it seems an awful lot like to the mom and to us that you have a teacher taking advantage of a child with learning disabilities to try to indoctrinate them into radical gender ideology. What other excuse is there? And that's why I say this is the lowest of the low. I think it's bad whenever you indoctrinate any student or any kid. But when you indoctrinate a kid that has learning disabilities, whose parents have told you repeatedly that they are concerned with the kind of stuff their child is bringing home, like a bracelet that says Diva that he doesn't even know what it means, and a coloring assignment that says be gay, read books. So you have educators, and I am going to use that phrase very loosely, who are taking a kid with learning disabilities, calling him a girl, repeatedly misgendering him, calling him Queen Diva, hanging a picture of him on a wall with the nickname Queen Diva when he wanted his nickname to be Ninja, and giving him in the month of January pride coloring assignments? What other conclusion can you come to besides this is some sick, sick individual who decided I have a kid with learning disabilities and I'm going to indoctrinate them and convince them they're trans or gay or something like that, even though that they have shown no sort of interest in any of that stuff to their parents? So we get sent this. Nicole reaches out to the school, to the Seattle Public School District. Now they haven't responded to us. No response to us. But immediately after Nicole reaches out to them, so now they know that this parent who's complained to them about all of this stuff already has brought the story to the news media, all of a sudden her phone's off the hook. And all of a sudden the school is calling the mother, not responding to our request for comment. The school is calling the mother and basically saying that the teachers who were doing this no longer work in the district. And not because of this, just because of some crazy level of turnover. So the teachers who gave the gay reading book assignment and put the picture up on the wall that said Queen Diva, Ingram High School told the mom, oh, this these people don't work there anymore, so don't worry about it. And she says, also after we reached out, she received a text from the teacher in question saying, your son chose that name, the Queen Diva. When the son repeatedly told the mom, I don't even know what that means. And the mom literally took him to the internet and typed in like Queen Diva and showed like, you know, drag queen. And is this what, do you know what this stuff is? Do you understand what they're calling you? And he's like, why are they calling me that? He doesn't understand why they're calling him that. He said, I wanted my nickname on my picture to be Ninja. This is genuinely disturbing and disgusting stuff. And the school says that picture has now been taken down because the mom complained, right? And I don't know if they're ever going to respond to our request for comment. They'll probably just say, we can't comment on individual student issues, and that's fine. But again, this stuff happens all the time. With these wild assignments, wild reading assignments, whatever it is, but I think this takes on a special sort of WTF when you're talking about a kid with learning disabilities and a mom who's already told the school, don't call my kid a diva. And then they put his picture on the wall saying Queen Diva. It's genuinely disturbing stuff. And it's no surprise really coming out of the Seattle Public School District. This was a school district that just had a federal complaint filed against it for secret gender transitions. Remember we talked about this with the community health lockers? I think we broke this story initially that they were going to be installing these quote unquote community health lockers where Seattle Children's Hospital would stock it with specific items that students might need but might be too scared to ask their parents for. Like chest binders, that's tape used to compress your breasts as a young woman so you can be more masculine. Tucking clothing. So if you're a boy and you want to tuck your testicles in to look more feminine. So the nonprofit Defending Education has filed a federal complaint against the Seattle Public School District for this kind of insanity, for clear efforts to help trans children. And it's not a surprise, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we did a story on the percentage increase in kids identifying as trans or non-binary in some of these really woke school districts, the worst offenders being Seattle Public Schools and Olympia Public Schools. It's like 1,000% increases or something like that in the number of kids who identify as gender fluid in some way. Why do you think it is? There's some, because you have special groups where you can talk about this stuff. They give you assignments. They have reading assignments. You have teachers who are indoctrinating kids in radical gender ideology. You have special lockers where you can get free chest binders and tucking underwear. When are we done with this? Is the question I have. And it has to come from parents and voters. You have to be done with it. We have to just say no. And I'm sorry, indoctrinating a child with learning disabilities to believe that they're a queen diva is so many steps too far. And another story that broke while we were gone, and we had actually been working with a whistleblower on this story for a while. She'd been sending us information about it. You know, you have these kids in these school districts like Seattle taking these teen health surveys or these child health surveys. And they were led to believe that this was some sort of anonymous thing. Not only were the questions in these health surveys wildly inappropriate, clear indoctrination and bizarre, but it turns out that the results weren't private at all, that they were keeping lists with kids' names on them. And names and grades and ages and the answers to all the questions. It was called the Check Yourself Assessment. Check Yourself Assessment given to all Seattle Public School students and happened in other districts as well. Here's the kind of questions they would ask like 6th and 7th graders. I identify as, and you had to pick like a gender identity. And look at all these kids saying, I'm questioning my gender identity. It says, about me, I am most likely to have a crush on. It had girls, boys, all genders, something else, both males and females. So you're asking 6th graders who they're most likely to have a crush on and giving them options like all genders, not sure, all genders, both male and female, something else fits better. Why do you need to know that? What does that have to do with educating our kids to give them this check yourself health survey in the 6th grade and ask them, who are you sexually attracted to, 6th grader? And then storing the data and all of their responses in there that are publicly disclosable so anybody can get their hands on it? You're worried about kids being outed at home? Oh, you're worried about kids being outed to their dangerous parents while you keep publicly available lists of these private answers that children gave you? Good God. I mean, this stuff has completely gotten out of control. But thank you to this mom of this Seattle 11th grader for not only, you know, calling the school out and talking to the school about something concerning that their child brought home, but letting us know about it so we can tell you. To me, it's one of the worst cases of child indoctrination we've seen. When you're taking someone, you know, it's similar to me to like when we see the cases involving, we did that one out of Olympia with a 5th grader whose teacher was like having a secret email conversation with them about them being trans and delete emails and hide them from your mom. And they'd engaged in this whole secretive email relationship so the teacher could help this little kid who was an immigrant to the country be trans. So it's like when you indoctrinate these young kids or a kid with learning disabilities, there's no bottom for them. There's no low. And this is what people allow them to get away with. There's so many parents who are allowing them to get away with this and who will hear this story and think, oh, there's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong with a little be gay coloring assignment? What's wrong with calling a kid Queen Diva as a nickname in a classroom? It's just beyond bizarre. All right, I do want to touch on this quick, a follow-up to a story we discussed earlier this week. So obviously the Somali fraud thing has become huge, and now all these independent journalists across the country are checking in on daycares in their states to see if there's any fraud or accountability or oversight or anything like that. And as you know, Jonathan Cho, Cam Higby, Carlene Johnson, they had gone out in our state in late December to visit some of these Somali-run daycares. And rather than put effort into investigating the possibility of fraud, Nick Brown, the attorney general, and the new mayor of Seattle were on social media essentially threatening to charge these reporters with a hate crime for going to ask questions of childcare providers who get taxpayer funds. Our friend Chris Daniels at Como News caught up with AG Nick Brown to ask him about this.
Are you aware of incidents of fraud?
We're not yet, but we're working really closely with our agency, DCYF, that oversees a lot of that. And, you know, what we started to get was a real flood of complaints, people concerned, people showing up at their house trying to film children. And no matter the issue, if people are complaining at our office that they're, you know, people are showing up trying to film their houses and their children, like, that's an issue. They're like, hey, that might be harassment. You got to calm down. The allegations of fraud are something that we have to take seriously and make sure that there's not fraud there. And if there is fraud, people should be held accountable for it. But what I was really concerned was about the level of harassment, you know, sort of random vigilante people just showing up on people's doorsteps. Like, that would make all of us scared. And some of the rhetoric around it, frankly, is racist.
Racist. Yeah. I haven't seen anything from any of the independent journalists who have been out that were being racist. There is fraud being perpetrated in Minnesota, and it just so happens to be within the Somali population. And it's been going on for years, and people have been prosecuted federally from the Somali population. And they're donating money from these fraudulent daycares to Somali political candidates in the state of Washington and elsewhere. So for an independent journalist, sure, go to all the daycares. I don't care. Go to all the daycares run by the immigrant communities, run by white people, whatever it is. But it makes a hell of a lot of sense, given the story in Minnesota, to start with the Somali daycares in Washington state. Don't you think? Nope, that makes you racist. Don't do that, because we'll charge you with a hate crime. It's always about race. And that's what allowed the fraud to continue for so long in Minnesota. Again, I said this, don't trust me. Trust Time and the New York Times, who said and who quoted whistleblowers who said the state was concerned to come forward because the Somali fraudsters had specifically said that they would paint them as racists on the news. So you're using the racial element to get independent journalists to back down and back away, and we're not going to do that. And I know that the individuals who are investigating the child cares in Washington state and elsewhere aren't going to be dissuaded by you calling them racist, because I'm sure you've called them racist like a million times before, and now the word means nothing. But speaking of daycares, this is an interesting statistic that, again, any reasonable person would look at and say, gee, given what's happening in Minnesota, maybe we should look into the fraud issue. And there's nothing controversial about that. The state should always be looking into state contracts, taxpayer money, looking for instances of fraud. So this is the headline from our friends at the Center Square. Number of licensed Washington childcare providers has increased 36% in 5 years. 36% in 5 years. Now you might say, well, you know, maybe they just have a lot of kids to take care of. And maybe after the pandemic, the amount of kids who needed to be in one of these childcares just increased. Nope. Nope, it only increased by 2,000 kids. From 49,000 to 51,000. So a small increase in the number of kids who need the service and a 36% increase in licensed Washington childcare providers over the same period of time. Center Square says the number of licensed childcare providers in Washington state increased from 2020 till now from 4,768 to 6,504. So just to look at the numbers on the base level, that is about 2,000 additional, right? So 2,000 more licensed childcare providers in the state to help 2,000 more children. So that's a childcare provider per child who needs the service. If you're telling me there's no fraud in that, you are the most gullible human being on the planet. They go on to say, in October, DCYF, the Department of Children, Youth and Families, anticipated 63,000 more children served monthly through its Working Connections Child Care Subsidy Program, which would have been the highest number served since 2010. However, according to DCYF data, the actual number of children served last year turned out to be significantly less than expected, with 51,000 children enrolled. This decrease is attributed to budgetary and policy decisions by the state legislature that included a delayed subsidy rate increase for center-based providers, delayed income eligibility expansion, and the removal of certain eligibility expansions. So they're all like, oh, yeah, we expected so many more kids, but they didn't get more kids. But the number of daycares compared to the increase over time makes no sense. It doesn't compute at all. None of it makes sense. So Nick Brown should be more concerned about that and looking into the high likelihood that fraud is going on than it should be some independent journalist showing up and knocking on people's doors and asking questions. But of course, that doesn't play with his base. All right, a major climate scandal brewing in Washington State. We'll dive into it coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. And he can give you a market analysis for 2026. So kind of talk about what he expects the market to do this year. Are there better times of the year to sell your home than others? And he'll look at what he believes you might need to do to your home from a cosmetic update perspective in order to get the most possible value out of it. And so getting a head start on those projects is a good idea. So go to sellwithwes.com, start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then reach out to our friend Wes, like so many Undivided viewers and listeners have, to get information on the best time of year to sell your home and what might need to be done before that and what the market is looking like. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, the state of Washington had to come out yesterday and admit that it overstated the impact of its climate projects by a whopping 9,500%. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Oop. Okay, so in November, the state of Washington came out and it released a report called the Climate Commitment Act Investments Report for fiscal year 2025. And in theory, this is a good thing, right? Like, I think the CCA is total phony fraud. But if we're going to move forward with the Climate Commitment Act, I sure as hell want to know what climate projects you're spending these billions of dollars on that you're sucking up from people at the gas pump. Because, of course, the Climate Commitment Act is having a profound impact on people. They're paying more in energy prices. They're paying more at the gas pump because the state of Washington decided it would be a good idea to auction off carbon credits and to charge polluters and said, oh, the polluters won't pass that on to people. No big deal. Stupid. Of course, they're going to. So now the state comes out and it says, hey, we spent, you know, $1.5 billion this year in CCA funds. Here's a full list, hundreds of pages, all the projects that got some of this money. But the other thing that that report did is it laid out what's the impact to the climate, which again would be an important thing to know. Like, okay, Climate Commitment Act, we're told we need this expensive, stupid thing because it's going to save the planet. And this is an existential crisis. So we need it. Billions of dollars coming in. Here's how that money is being spent. And here's how many metric tons of carbon these projects will keep out of our atmosphere. So that's what this report was supposed to do. It comes out the very same day. Todd Myers sees it, our friend with the Washington Policy Center, who is our go-to on all things environment. He sees the report and he immediately thinks to himself, this looks suspicious. He immediately comes out on social media. These are tweets he sent out November 26, 2025. And he basically said, this whole report is unreliable. He said the statistics don't make any sense. The reductions that they're claiming that these programs are going to have for carbon emissions don't make any sense at all. So he says it immediately after the report is published, that the numbers aren't jiving. And it turns out that Todd Myers, per the usual, was right. So the Department of Ecology came out today and amended that report from November and it added this addendum to the front page. Following the publication of this report, the Washington State Department of Commerce submitted revised greenhouse gas emissions data to the Department of Ecology. Due to a data entry error, Commerce reported that 7.5 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions would be reduced as a result of 8 home electrification projects. Well, they said, we took a closer look. The correct data now estimates 78,000 tons of emissions will be reduced over the lifetime of those projects. Think about that error for a second. From 7.5 million metric tons to 78,000. The Department of Commerce and the Department of Ecology coming out calling it a data error that significantly inflated the reported emissions reduction for commerce programs, specifically looking at 8 programs involving home electrification. And when they first put out the report, and this is one of the numbers that Todd looked at and thought, there's no way that's true. They said in November, oh my gosh, these home electrification programs are going to take 7.5 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions out of the environment. Todd's like, no, it's not. And now they say, oh, sorry. It's not 7.5 million. It's 78,000. Pretty substantial. So we asked Todd Myers to come on the show today to react to their correction. That's a pretty big revision.
Yeah, it's a giant mistake. And the frustrating thing is that the day that the report was released back in November, I immediately saw that there was a problem, looked into it within an hour. It's a 500-page report and they didn't have the spreadsheet. So I had to literally scroll through the PDF, looking through their spreadsheet, you know, page by page. And I identified it within an hour and then put it out there publicly. So, you know, why is it that the people who claim that they're experts, who do this every day, couldn't identify something that I was able to identify immediately and point out within hours of the project, of the report being released?
Why, upon seeing it, did you immediately know something was wrong?
There's a couple of things. One, the amount of CO2 emissions reductions was so high, right? They said, oh, it's equivalent to 40% of all cars and trucks on the state, you know, in the state for an entire year. That's a huge amount, right? I mean, if you were able to do that, that would be a big news. But I knew it wasn't true. The other thing is that there's a very geeky metric that I run called cost per metric ton, which is basically just how much it costs to avoid emitting one metric ton of CO2.
Okay.
In the last report, that number was $1,400. This year, they claimed it was $40. Well, I knew that was wrong, right? I mean, that's just so different. And that was where I realized it was wrong. And so that's where I started looking to identify the projects that were wrong. And sure enough, the projects that I identified hours after the report was released were the ones that they admitted were wrong yesterday.
So forgive me, are they just making shit up?
What's interesting is that I have done email requests, public disclosure requests in the past on things that they have made mistakes. This isn't the first time they've made a mistake. We've talked about many. They keep making mistakes. And so I've done disclosure requests and to see what they say internally. And internally, they believe what they are saying. So I think that they are reckless. I think that they are arrogant. I think that when they see numbers that make no sense, they just assume that it's because they're awesome. But what it shows is that the people who claim that they are the experts who can manage this, you know, transition to a carbon-free economy at very little cost really don't know what they're doing. They're not careful. And we are paying the cost and we are not getting the environmental benefit that they promised.
Well, right. And billions of dollars are being poured into the Climate Commitment Project Act. And to think that. And that's why I hate to go to the worst case scenario. But to me, I see that and I'm like, they're trying to justify us having some of the highest gas prices in the country.
Yeah. But does it, I mean, I don't know if it matters whether they are just arrogant and incompetent or whether they are lying. I mean, really, this program is so flawed repeatedly. As you and I have talked about, they were the ones who said, oh, it will add only pennies to the cost of a gallon of gas. They actually said that natural gas prices would go down. Both of those things were nonsense. That was in 2023. The year after that, they failed to publish the CO2 emissions report that they were required by law. That forced us to sue them. And now they've published this report where 86% of the emissions that they claim have been avoided are simply fake. Every year they make a major mistake, or they do something, or they fail to report something that's necessary. Look, this should be the straw that breaks the camel's back. We need to overhaul the state's climate policy and climate program because we are spending huge amounts of money. As you said, we've spent $1.5 billion, we've collected more than $4 billion, and we are not getting the environmental results. And these are the folks who claim that it is absolutely critical that we do this or the planet is in trouble, and yet they're not competent to deal with the magnitude of the issue.
All right, Todd Myers, good stuff as always. We appreciate you breaking it down. Thanks for joining us.
Always nice to see you.
Crazy. And you could look at this and say, and I think Todd's fair about it, right? You know, or are they going in there and artificially manipulating the numbers to make it look like there's going to be this massive reduction in carbon emissions? So they came back and corrected it, right? So if they were trying to do something nefarious, then to correct it a month and a half later and then have to admit this big error. So I also don't believe that that's what it is, but it's the incompetence. It's the incompetence. Todd knew immediately the numbers didn't make sense. This would be like pulling every car and truck off the highways of Washington State for an entire year. No way 8 home electrification projects are going to have the same result. And it took them all this time. Why didn't they listen to him to begin with? It was a mathematical error. It's because they believe what they're selling. Oh my gosh, the Climate Commitment Project is so great. No, it's not great. It is not great. You're never going to reach your goal of totally eliminating carbon emissions and all these dumb climate goals that you set. And I'm not saying that having goals to protect this wonderful planet of ours isn't a good thing. But the people who should be angriest about this are the people who will just look the other way like it's no big deal because of politics. If you actually care about the climate, you should see that they're not helping the climate. They're not doing, it's not doing what they said the project would do. And you're just getting poorer because all your costs have gone up. It's wild what people are willing to look the other way over for the sake of politics. It's just wild. So we appreciate Todd. As always, he's always right. Always right. All right. Coming up next, some scary statements about private property and property ownership from the new communist mayor of New York City and certainly the socialist mayor of Seattle. We'll get to what they're saying and what it could mean for homeowners and landlords alike. First, we hear so many fantastic stories from you guys about First Mark Insurance. I feel like the First Mark family of undivided viewers and listeners is growing by the day. And it's a really easy thing to do, to just go to firstmarkinsurance.com as you're evaluating your family's budget this year and saying, how can we save some money so maybe we can afford a family vacation in the winter or something. So firstmarkinsurance.com, tell them you want to take the First Mark challenge. They'll go through your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance options and your needs. They'll go out, they'll shop their market of carriers, come back with their recommendations, and they do all of that for free. You never pay First Mark anything for their services. And you might end up saving a bunch of money, like Christine, who's saving $10,000 a year because she changed her 2 business policies, her homeowner's policy, and her 3 vehicle policies over to First Mark. And she said, thank you for your continual nagging about doing the First Mark challenge. It really has paid off. I am so happy to hear that. I'm so happy to hear that. Firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, we started the shows this week by playing some terrifying things that Zohran Mamdani said during his inaugural address when he was sworn in as the New York mayor. And he went from socialist to full-blown communist, talking about putting aside rugged individualism for the warmth of collectivism. He is a full-blown communist. And some of his remarks on private property, not surprising, but still, we have to treat them with the seriousness that they deserve. So he has talked a lot about tenant rights. He put out this post: too many New Yorkers are getting ripped off, paying obscene rents for apartments that fail basic health and safety standards. When tenants speak up, landlords threaten eviction. That ends now. Today, we launch a citywide crackdown on rental ripoffs like landlord neglect and outrageous fees. But I'm particularly interested in a couple video clips I want to play for you. One is what Zohran Mamdani said that sounds a lot to me like seizing private property.
If your landlord does not responsibly steward your home, city government will step in.
Okay, that's terrifying. Even more terrifying is what his now tenant director, C. Weaver, said on video in 2021.
I think the reality is that for centuries, we've really treated property as an individualized good and not a collective good. And we are going to transitioning to treating it as a collective good and towards a model of shared equity will require that we think about it differently. And it will mean that families, especially white families, but some POC families who are homeowners as well, are going to have a different relationship to property than the one that we currently have.
Oh my God. Mind you, her mother owns a $1.6 million home in a neighborhood that she had complained was being gentrified. So, you know, it's always like rules for thee, but not for me. But that's terrifying stuff. I mean, they think of everything as a collective. So that home that you bought, that you saved and worked overtime to be able to afford the down payment on, you're going to have a different relationship with it because they want it to be a collective good. They want all your hard work and what you've accomplished and owned to be shared with other people who haven't done squat. And that's in New York City. But Katie Wilson, the new socialist mayor of Seattle, has been equally as, I think, the rhetoric that she's used has been just as disturbing, I think, as the rhetoric that Mamdani and his team have used when it comes to private ownership of property. So we asked Sean Flynn with the Rental Housing Association of Washington to join us to talk about, you know, are you going to have landlords just start to flee because now we have a socialist as mayor? Sean Flynn, what is your reaction to that? You know, the housing, it just has to be a collective good. You can't own anything.
You know, this, I think these two quotes really put into context the fact that these democratic socialists are indeed communists, right? These are basic tenets of communism. And a good thing for us, we have this thing called the U.S. Constitution that in theory should protect private property. And private property is one of the things that has allowed this country to flourish. And I think that this sort of language from folks being appointed to the cabinet of the largest city in our nation should really make people concerned.
Yeah, and communism is fair. I mean, I don't think that's hyperbole because you have Mamdani, when he was giving his inaugural address, literally quoting communists. I mean, talking about collectivism versus individualism. And so he seems to have really stepped into full-blown communism. So then, of course, in Seattle, closer to home, we have Katie Wilson, who has been hesitant to really accept any sort of label, but I think it's fair to call her at least a socialist, and she said that that's fine if people want to call her a socialist. Do you have concerns, or what concerns do you have about how she might further erode property rights?
Oh, you know, at RHA, we're always on protecting property rights, the election of Mayor Wilson is a grave concern at this point. We've tried this. We've done this again and again and again. Government ownership of housing always has ended in disaster. When you make things hard for housing providers choose a better jurisdiction. And so, unfortunately, in the middle of a housing crisis, when we use language like this, it doesn't help. And none of the policies that have been put forward, either by Wilson or Mamdani, are going to create a single new housing unit. And that is really, really sad.
Are you seeing any preemptive, like, do you have members who said if Katie Wilson wins, I'm selling? Or are they waiting to see?
I think that some folks are waiting to see what's going on with Katie Wilson. I've heard from a lot of folks, not just in the real estate world, that they're looking to get out of the state. Between the combination of where Wilson is landing and some of the comments from your favorite governor, Bob Ferguson, around an income tax, I think... I'll just say it. A lot of people I know are looking at real estate in Florida.
Yeah, I was just there for the break, and my husband and I are like, wow, it's nice down here, and so many of the complaints we have about, you know, Seattle and our state just don't exist down there right now. You know, but with the Katie Wilson thing, my only thought is, and I've been saying this for months now, I mean, aren't we kind of in a socialism era anyway? I mean, I think so many of the policies that people who, you know, say they're Democrats and even liberal Democrats are passing in Olympia, rent control is a socialist policy.
For a lot of the folks that I meet in my day-to-day life living in Seattle, they say they're a Democrat. And when I ask them, like, are you for rent control? Are you for an income tax. They're like, oh, well, no, I'm not a communist. I'm just a Democrat. I'm like, well, I hate to break it to you, but the Democratic Party is it had a full socialist takeover here in this state. And you're going to see once moderate Democrats continue to fall to the extreme left wing of their own party. I know this isn't the topic that we're on today, but I think Adam Smith has got a real race on his hands. I hope he's taking that race seriously. I do. I think that Ms. Sawant has the best ground game in the business, and she is going to be riding the peak wave of Mamdani and Wilson. I think that at this point, nothing would shock me.
Wow. Yeah, well, and I'm sure he's hopefully taking it seriously as well. Just on another note, and I guess somewhat related, the legislative session starts next week. We already know income tax is going to take a lot of oxygen out of this session, as are, I think, the debate around the two initiatives and whether they choose to hear them. But do you think that they are still going to have time to try to ruin the lives of landlords in our state even further? Or do you feel like you'll be left alone this session?
Oh, I think that the majority party always has find some time to use housing providers as a punching bag. So I think that they'll make the time if necessary.
All right. And I know you'll be down there, Sean Flynn, with the Rental Housing Association of Washington. We appreciate it. And I know we'll be talking to you quite a bit this session.
Thanks so much for having me.
Man, Sean Flynn thinks that Congressman Adam Smith could be beat by Shama Sawant. I don't think she breaks double digits. But I mean, we have a socialist mayor, Mamdani. All these people are just embracing socialism and communism. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe her ground game is good enough. So Sean and I talked about making a steak dinner bet on that. Maybe I should take that back, because I really do not believe that Shama Sawant can beat Adam Smith. I mean, he's in the suburbs of Seattle. It's not Seattle proper. Right. Yeah. But he's in the suburbs of Seattle.
I don't know. I think she's going to do better than you think. I think it's going to be close.
So should I?
No, I mean, definitely over double digits.
I'm taking the steak bet. Bet, and you can just win regardless. So if he wins, you can still come. If I win, you can still come.
Deal.
Okay, that's a win-win. All right, you don't eat very much anyway. You've always been a very petite eater. So I'm not worried about you getting like a tomahawk steak that costs $250 at Daniel's. So
okay, I'll go with New York.
Like, I'm a more expensive date. Like, I will absolutely eat that. I feel like you're always very ladylike.
I try to be.
Yes, very ladylike. Cheap date. Not cheap, but cheap date. All right.
Advertisement. Thank you.
Nicole's. Yeah, that's a good thing. You know, that's a good thing. Anyway, totally off topic. Did I tell you our friends at Valentine Roofing came to pay me a visit? Mike and I really needed our gutters cleaned out because we had not done it and the storms were coming. And so I was like, I'm going to call up our sponsors at Valentine Roofing because they do more than just roofing. But they cleaned off our roof. We had some moss on our roof and stuff. And then they cleaned out our gutters and I looked at what they had in the bucket. I'm like, geez, yeah, that was a little bit overdue. But they were just so great. They were so great and friendly and timely. And they cleaned every last leaf that came out of the gutters up. They're like, no leaf left behind. So I absolutely appreciated that. So if you want to help support a business that supports us, and maybe you need some work done to your roof, I mean, that would be the primary thing, especially this time of year. Like, so much of the warmth of your home is lost through your roof and attic. So if you want to bundle attic insulation with any new roof, you can save 10% off your entire project through Valentine. So call them for an estimate, 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING. Make sure to tell them that you heard about them here on Undivided and get your free estimate today, 206-ROOFING. All right, more on Mamdani. I know we won't be obsessed with him. We won't be obsessed with him, but I think it is important to recognize this moment in time. I said on the show on Monday, we have to treat this weird, bizarre push toward collectivism with the seriousness that it demands, because a lot of the places that ended up in these brutal socialist and communist regimes, you know, they never expected it to get so bad. I mean, Maduro in Venezuela rose to power. When he was first put into power, he was a union bus driver. Oh, we just want something better for the working class and for people. And look what he became. So we can't pretend like that could never happen here. But I just have to laugh at this. I got a good chuckle out of this. So Mamdani, who's a notorious cop hater, hates the police. He came out and had a press conference with his new NYPD commish, Tish, and they bragged about gun violence, gun crimes dropping in New York City. And at first I saw that and I'm like, wait a second, carry the two, add this. I was like, he's only been in office for a couple days. So certainly he must have given a ton of credit to Eric Adams, because these are 2025 numbers. So he's, as the new mayor, coming out with his new NYPD commissioner and talking about massive record lows on gun violence data in 2025, and they don't mention Eric Adams once. Nope, nope, no credit for Eric Adams. They have nothing to do with this. Not to mention that some of the policies that Zohran Mamdani is saying that he wants to implement are going to obviously increase crime. He's talking about basically opening up the jails, opening up the doors, you know, not getting rid of bail, not putting repeat criminals away. He wants to take it easy on criminals. And who is he pretending to be up there with a New York NYPD commissioner? And then I think we have this. He's like thanking the cops. This guy who hates cops is thanking the cops.
When we say that murder went down by over 20% from last year, that is anything but abstract. But make no mistake, none of this arrives by accident. Each of these markers of achievement is a testament to a police department that cares about this city and works with this city to remake this city. Thank you to those who are here at One Police Plaza and to those across our five boroughs for the work that you all do in making today possible. As we lead together, I want to see these numbers continue to drop, to continue to nurture the partnership between the NYPD and the communities across the city, and to empower our police force to focus on the serious crimes that they signed up to tackle.
Yeah, and look, fine. If you want to change your tune on police and thank them and all this stuff, great. Okay, fine. But the policies that you're saying you want to implement are not conducive with continuing to reduce crime. And one quick correction. So Tish has been the New York City police commissioner since November of 2024. So she also served under Eric Adams. So I guess thanking her is, I guess, thanking Eric Adams, but it's not. Because Eric Adams, this was a big thing for him, and I think this is one of the areas he deserves credit for, taking a harder stance on crime. And so, you know, they just left him out entirely, but at least they thanked the police officers. But I would imagine that those numbers are not going to decrease under Zohran Mamdani. All right, this next one's sad for me. This is just sad for me. I know this is our national news block, but this is not just global, universal news. So you guys know I'm a big believer in aliens, ancient alien theory, all that kind of stuff, as evidenced by my spacecraft back here.
You know what? I got a text from somebody asking where you got that so that they could try to find one for their mother-in-law who said, I would like the spaceship for Christmas that Randy has behind her.
Well, where do you think I got it?
Guess. Oh, I know. Home Goods.
We talked about it. Which I can't go to Home Goods for the first 3 months of the year because I have a problem because I buy shit like this. And so it's my New Year's resolution. Anyway.
I love that.
Yeah, so Home Goods, but quite a while ago.
I also tried to image search it to find it for him.
Oh, I'm sure you could find something similar. Eh. This one's like made out of wood. It's a little weird. I'm sure you could find some sort of metal one. Anyway, aliens, love them, totally believe in them. I don't know how you couldn't. But Elon Musk is throwing cold water on my conspiracy theories. So he came out and he says, look, we got thousands of satellites up in the air. They've never had to dodge a UFO spacecraft, not once. Here he is.
If I was aware of the slightest evidence of aliens, I would immediately post that on X.
Yeah. That's good.
And,
so the question is...
It would be the most viewed post of all time.
Yep. So, I actually wonder about the U.S. public, if they would like, oh, that's interesting, go back to their sports scores the next day.
Yeah.
I think everyone would want to see the alien.
Yeah.
Like, if you got one.
Well, like OJ Simpson.
Total bro conversation.
Fast way to increase the military budget. We're like, we found an alien. It seems dangerous.
That's right. Unify the world.
Like, they don't have an incentive to hide the aliens. They have an incentive to show the alien. Yeah. Because they would not have any more arguments about the military budget. If they seem a little bit dangerous.
Well, I can always hope. I can always hope.
I mean, you know, we've got 9,000 satellites up there. We've never had to maneuver around an alien spaceship. Yet.
Yet. Okay, good. But I believe Elon, and that kind of bums me out. But it is true. You know, we're waiting for the government to confirm it. But Elon and all these people who are in private space exploration, I mean, if they saw it, they wouldn't have the same incentive the government has, maybe to hide it from the American people. But he's saying 9,000 satellites, we've never had to maneuver around a UFO yet. That doesn't mean they don't exist, though. They got all sorts of technology. They're going through wormholes and all this stuff, and they've got cloaking mechanisms. And Nicole, don't look at me like that.
No, I do think that if he sees one, though, we'll know about it.
Oh, 100%. Elon's not going to hide that from us. I feel pretty confident.
The government cannot scare him.
No, not at all. I feel pretty confident. All right, let's jump to our Daily Show poll, if we could, real quick. I wanted to ask you guys about this because I'm sort of torn. The legislative session begins on Monday, and I think we'll be pretty focused on the taxation issue. They're going to be trying to get an income tax in place, but we have the two Let's Go Washington initiatives that you guys, that we, that Let's Go Washington has put a lot of effort into on girls' sports and protecting parental rights. So these are initiatives to the legislature. So the question is, are they going to do anything with them? If they don't, then these two initiatives go to voters in November. And so I've kind of been wrestling with, what do I care if the legislature does anything with them? So I asked you on Patreon, Locals and X, would you prefer that the legislature pass these into law, or that it just goes to voters and voters are the ones who decide on yay or nay girls' sports and parental rights? Nicole?
Well, I would like to see the lawmakers do it because it would happen quicker. In a sense that we could claim success sooner.
Sure.
If the voters vote on it, then they can't mess it up like they did the parental rights.
Not the same way. Yeah, it's not as easy for them to undo like they did parental rights.
So in that sense, I would like it to go to the voters. So done deal. We're out.
Yeah, most of you also want to see it go to voters. I would say for me, before I get to your guys' answers, I want them to have hearings on it. Cause I want them. There's a part of me that wants them to have to vote and literally say yay or nay. Yeah, no, we want boys to play against girls, and I want every single member of the legislature to have to be on the record about it.
I just don't think they care.
No,
I think they are on the record by not speaking out about it and not doing anything else.
I know. Matthew Cook, the legislature has shown time and time again they have no interest in maintaining the integrity when adopting a voter initiative. And look, they can find ways to change anything if they want to change it, but it's more difficult if it goes to voters to mess with. And I think also optically, it's not great as well. Evie Stevens, they twist the language so much that people vote backward unintentionally. Just say it simple. And that's the other issue. Mm-hmm. Is how are they going to, they'll probably say, do you want kids to get unannounced genital exams? Yes or no? You know, they'll probably have some dumb
description. It's usually something along the lines of like a double negative or something.
Yes.
They confuse you with the way that it's worded, like they did the CCA. I firmly believe that was voters confused.
Yeah. Sherry, it's a lose-lose. Legislature passed and dismantled it like they did parental rights last year, put it to voters and lie and confuse voters about what the initiative is really about, and the lack of voter integrity comes into play. Sherry's blackpilled, but I don't disagree. Smoke and Joe, I'd rather have the lawmakers pass it because it means we have a glimmer of hope that they may be coming to their senses. They're not coming to their senses. No. Something has to force them to get there. All right. Are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Are you just like, I have no idea. I haven't looked at my 401k in years. I have no idea what it's doing, which is sometimes a good thing. I mean, I don't think you should look at it every single day and worry yourself over your investments, but you do want to have a general idea of a strategy for risk management. And Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital can help you with that. In fact, Zach's having a New Year Reset live webinar January 29th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. So this is a really good sort of no commitment thing where you can log in, hear what Zach has to say about the impact AI could have on the market in 2026. He'll also explain how Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. So they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register now for the free New Year Reset live webinar January 28th. And then while you're at knowyourriskpodcast.com doing that, you can also schedule your own Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap. Knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, let's do some comments before we get to the most cringeworthy thing that has ever happened at the U.S. Capitol ever. Yes, that includes January 6th. ever. All right, on Seattle schools grooming a special needs kid, Marion Williams said on Facebook, they did that to my son. My son is autistic, and when he was 13, he was realizing he was autistic and different from other kids, and he had anger issues. His teacher told him he might be happier if he tried to be a girl. Crazy.
Oh my gosh.
That is insane,
that's
but that's
terrifying.
Like what's happening. They want mm-hmm. these kids, sickos. SSR's garage. When I was in sixth grade, I would have been far too embarrassed to answer the questions that we had in that thing. Like, oh. Who are you sexually attracted to? Like, what do you mean? I'm in sixth grade.
And you have to write your name at the top, too.
Crazy.
You have to identify yourself.
Yeah. Wow. Moon Goddess, homeschool your children. Homeschool your children. Mm-hmm. Robert Law, special education, more like special indoctrination. This is funny.
It's true.
Pat Coldwell, Washington schools are leering centers.
Oh, that's good.
Good time. Good times. On the attorney general calling fraud investigation racist, big shocker there. Bill Biz, within hours of the Somali daycare story breaking, it appeared that the same professional signs supporting Somalis immediately popped up in various cities nationwide. Amazing, huh? They're very organized. Yes, mm-hmm, they mm-hmm. are. Old Sub Sailor, racist is the magic get out of jail card for the Democrats, but the fatigue is growing. Oh, I agree. I don't care at all. Like somebody could, the Seattle Times could publish a story about me that literally just had a headline that said racist on the front mm-hmm. page with a big picture of me, and I just wouldn't even care. I'd make fun of them on the show, but I wouldn't care. Let's see. On the state admitting to climate data errors, Little Miss J says, in regard to the environmental situation, this again is why we need to question what they're doing, especially when it is our tax dollars. Brandy, can we hold these people accountable? Well, we can try, but we're a little outnumbered by the crazies at the moment.
Well, yeah, and we've already tried, like I said, to
they tried to repeal the CCA, and they all lied about it.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating that every time I fill up, I just am angry.
Yeah, John Thomas. Good thing we have, though, Trump. He's really succeeded in lowering prices across the country. And so we're not as bad here, but we're still so much worse than other places.
So much worse.
So much worse.
When I hear what other people are paying.
In the twos. John Thomas, do you all really believe it was an error and not deliberate lies? I don't. I don't know what to believe anymore. Why? Data entry error would not give a result that's almost 10,000% wrong. You got to freaking be kidding me. And Todd told them right away it was wrong. What took them so long to correct it? Just wild. On Mom Donnie threatening landlords, Mama Pillow, my odds are on the property owners. That woman is going to be surprised when she tries to take someone's property. Yeah. And John Thomas said something that others have been saying as well. I would say the NYC policy wouldn't survive SCOTUS, but most of the court was there for the obscene eminent domain ruling on private business being in public good. I don't foresee reversal. A couple other, let's see here. Michael Hayes, even though the information we're hearing is so disturbing, it's such a relief to hear common sense. The level of crazy being stuffed down our throats is exhausting. Yes, that's why we have each other. That's why we have each other. On Snarky Distinct, you are great. Do you see, I love reading comments about myself that are positive. Do you see a light at the end of the tunnel to bring Washington back from the brink with most voters buying into the BS? I don't know.
It's scary because everybody's leaving.
People
we
are
just
leaving.
Talk about people leaving constantly. So then you dig us. We're in a hole further and further every time somebody leaves the state.
I mean, every single person who's sane has to vote. And, you know, I think an income tax will be a step too far for a lot of people. I need to see what happens once Trump's out of office, because so much of what's been going on in the voting and the campaigning is about orange man bad. And I know they'll come up with another boogeyman, whoever it is, and they'll probably still talk about Donald Trump. But I do believe Donald Trump has had a down ballot impact in a state like Washington. So we'll see what happens when he's not here.
I think the income tax, I think it's going to, this millionaires thing is going to work for a while, though.
I know. It's ridiculous. They are master messengers. All right, Nicole, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I don't know if you guys knew. We didn't mention it on the show. We probably should have. Yesterday was the 5-year anniversary of the attack on our nation's capital. And Democrats chose to mark the occasion with what else? A candlelight vigil, where they marched down the steps, candles in hand,
They came from all directions, united as Democrats for our country and our democracy. So they came out real dramatic. To be honest, I saw this video all over social media, and I didn't even share it because I thought it was AI. I said, this has to be AI. It has to be. They're like, to honor the lives lost on January 6th. And I'm like, so Ashley Babbitt? And look, I've said January 6th was embarrassing, but there have been far deadlier and more dangerous riots that the left has had in recent years in our country, and they're not out there holding candlelight vigils for them. What were you going to say, Nicole?
Oh, I was just going to say, it's funny because I fall for AI constantly, and you, like, assume everything's AI.
Well, yeah, I was like, that's AI. And no, it was just Democrats desperate to paint themselves as the saviors of our nation, and they gathered together and they sang a little tune. I think we should sing it with them, don't you? Go ahead.
From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans, white with foam, bless America, my home, sweet home.
Good job there.
God bless America,
humor.
Beautiful. Oh, great moment for America there. Not secondhand cringe at all. That has been our closing sanity check. Chuck Schumer's not a bad singer. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. I don't want to hear any negativity about my singing voice, okay? No negativity. Nicole wasn't even singing because I don't think she knows the words.
Well, oh, I do.
Some kind of patriot you are.
I was like, I do not sing.
She doesn't like to sing.
Record.
And I have no shame. No shame. All right, we will see you back here tomorrow. What day is it today? Wednesday? Okay, tomorrow for our final live show of the week. It's been so wonderful this week being back with you guys. See you back here, same time, same place.